fights over water in Florida. This morning, what the state's agriculture sector has to say about it. That conversation's just ahead. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. The show is always live at 9. And now subscribe to the daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. You can also watch the show video on demand at the website tvjax.com. Well, just ahead, we're going to take your calls on the state's water wars as we hear from the North Florida growers. Get on the line now with your questions and comments. 549-2937. Also this morning, providing homes for heroes. A look at a unique real estate program for First Coast veterans. Plus, lots of ideas for your weekend from The Spectator. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, as the legislative session continues this month in Tallahassee, lawmakers are looking at a number of bills involving the state's water. One of them has already been passed into law, the Water Resources Act. Recently, we welcomed the St. John's Riverkeeper to discuss their opposition to that sweeping water policy bill, recently signed into law by the governor. This morning, we welcome another perspective. As we speak with Philip Leary of Leary Governmental Affairs Consultants, he represents the North Florida Growers Exchange. Philip, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to see you. And when it comes to the state's water wars, fights between environmentalists and agriculture interests, what are your questions? What are your thoughts? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email, tweet us, or you can weigh in on Facebook. So, Phil, as I mentioned, Senate Bill 552 was signed into law, the state's new Water Resources Act. A few weeks ago, the St. John's Riverkeeper voiced concerns about this act on this program. You called into the show and took a different tack. We're pleased to welcome you this morning to give the perspective of the North Florida Growers Exchange, whom you represent.
That's correct, Melissa. Yeah, the Growers Exchange are 25 family farms in Putnam, St. John's, and Flagler counties. They encompass about 26,000 acres of vegetables. That vegetable area has been in operation since the early 1900s, and those farmers that I represent have been intricately involved in the Lower St. John's River Basin Management Action Plan that was adopted in 2008 by the Department of Environmental Protection. We have implemented unique best management practices that have allowed us to reduce our nitrogen and phosphorus discharges that ultimately end up in the river by over 50%, now approaching 60%, which is we're right on target to meet the required reduction.
And when you say you've implemented these new measures, what are some specifics?
Well, one of the major things is laser leveling. We laser level the fields to assure that there's proper, you know, drainage. We also put in advanced water control structures at the end of the fields to control water discharges. We also use specialized banding equipment that puts the fertilizer directly in the row, not broadcast out. And then the newest best management practices that we're currently implementing is called ear drain tile, which is a new process that we're using in the Tri-County area. That's underground tile system that substantially assists in us reducing our water usage and our discharges and nutrient control. A lot of great potential with that, and we're seeing a lot of success.
We'll go to your calls in a moment as we discuss the state's new law looking at Florida's water resources. What are your questions as we speak to Phil Leary representing North Florida Growers? The number to join the show is 549-2937. Now, earlier when you and I talked, you expressed the sentiment, that environmental groups in Florida will never be satisfied. What did you mean by that?
Well, the bill, Senate Bill 552, which is Omnibus Water Resources Act, addresses surface water quality standards statewide. It allows the Department of Environmental Protection to go in and establish total maximum daily loads for nutrients in those water bodies. And then, working with stakeholders, throughout the area to implement a basement management action plan to address those issues. It also addresses springs restoration, point and non-point sources, public works projects, and very importantly, land acquisition. This bill was 2 years in the making, and you know we think as stakeholders in agriculture that it's going to be one of the most important pieces of legislation for water resources in the state.
Now, of course, agriculture has typically been one leg of Florida's economic stool over the decades. Tourism, growth, development, and agriculture still is. What would you say to critics of this bill? In particular, maybe the most prominent one was former Governor Bob Graham. He sent a letter to the current governor saying that this new law represents a purposeful effort to weaken protection and management of the state's water resources, that it does nothing to curb consumption and very little to slow the flow of pollutants into our rivers, lakes, and springs. He also said that the best management practices you're talking about are essentially allowing agriculture to monitor itself.
Well, two things I'd say to that. First, I think former Senator Graham is misunderstands what the bill does. And if you look to the comments of Commissioner of Agriculture Adam Putnam, who was a prime mover and shaker behind the bill, you will see that the best management practices that are currently being implemented and adopted, we have 90% participation in Northeast Florida amongst agriculture, will significantly continue to reduce nutrient discharges. And here's if you're not if a farmer is not participating in the best management practices, they are required by law to have a water quality monitoring program, which is very expensive, and those reports have to be submitted to the DEP and the Water Management District. So I disagree with the senator, and I think that this bill, I've been working in environmental and agriculture issues for over 20 years and in the legislature, and I think this bill is probably the best one I have ever seen.
This bill is now law, so correct. Now the question becomes one of funding and implementation. You've been going to Tallahassee during this legislative session to monitor the progress. What can we expect?
Well, I think that, you know, we're going to expect a lot. I think we will see hundreds of millions of dollars allocated for projects from the Everglades all the way to the Panhandle, dealing with the oyster issues in Apalachicola Bay. So it's all encompassing. The Amendment 1 funding, Amendment 1 passed, you know, 2 years ago, will allocate a significant amount of dollars for all of these projects, including cost share projects for agriculture to continue to implement the best practices that they have.
Let's go to your calls right now as we speak with Phil Leary, representing North Florida growers, when it comes to the state's new Water Resources Act. What are your questions about Florida's water, whether it comes to the St. Johns River or whatever's on your mind? The number to join the show is 549-2937. Mike is on the west side. Hi, Mike. Good morning.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, I just wanted to... You know, I understand, I think all of us understand that agriculture needs water. And I think we all understand that pollutants are going to be a factor in that. But I think I share a lot of people's frustration with the attitude. You know, you mentioned the comment that he made, that the speaker made a couple of weeks ago with regards to environmentalists will never be satisfied. I mean, we have some honest, serious, real problems with our water table. We have brackish water in our water table now. We've got the Florida legislature talking about allowing fracking, which is already proved to have some impact on groundwater. Our water usage, that's water we drink, dude. That's also water that it's part of our tourism industry. And I think when you make comments like that, like environmentalists will never be satisfied, it's not just environmentalists, it's a lot of people. And that attitude is just like, don't you drink the water here? Aren't you aware of these issues and when you come up with this attitude of, oh, they'll never be satisfied, it just shows a fundamental ignorance of just how pervasive water issues are throughout the state and how they cut across all of these lines. We're having to share this resource. It's a shared resource. It's something that all of us have to use. And that attitude bespeaks a real lack of stewardship on your part. Now, I'll take response off the air, but I think that's just, I get appalled when I hear that. It's just very frustrating. Thank you.
Phil Leary.
Well, I think, you know, I didn't mean that to say that we're not concerned about it. The alternative to passing legislation that addresses all these issues is to do nothing, and that's not an option. Certainly, water is a critical component of agriculture and growing food and fiber. So we don't have a cavalier attitude about it. But the fact of the matter is the environmental community continues to tout that it's not enough. Well, it's a step-by-step process. We didn't get to this position overnight, and we're not going to solve it overnight. But the progress we've made, and let me just read it very quickly, in the lower basin of the St. Johns River in 2013, we reached 88% of the required total nitrogen and 75% of the total phosphorus reductions by all the stakeholders and over 60% for agriculture. We are reducing our water usage, agriculture, every year to now where public supply, urban users, are significantly the most greatest water user for groundwater. It's a balancing act, and we all have to work together. But, you know, castigating legislation because it doesn't go as far as you want it to. It certainly went further than we wanted it to, but there's
a balance.
How do
you mean? How did it go further than you wanted it
to? One of the things that they're going to be doing in this is that the BMPs that agriculture use now will become a regulatory program, not volunteer, regulatory. So if you are not implementing the best management practices, you will have to do water quality monitoring. On a farm, a 300-acre farm, to do the sophisticated water quality monitoring would be $25,000 to $30,000 a year minimum.
549-2937. Let's go to Daniel in St. Augustine. Daniel, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Great issue, great topic. You know, there's a lot of legislation and control over agriculture, much more than I think people think. But one of the aspects that I think is a major component to our nutrient loading in our waterways and our aquifers is the private community. You can get a 1,000-home community like in Palencia or Nocatee, and every single one of those homes can go buy as much fertilizer from Ace or Lowe's and put as much down as they want, and no one says anything. Thank you very much.
Daniel, thanks for the call.
Well, no question. We're going to have to do a better job working with our local county extension offices in educating homeowners about the use of both fertilizers and pesticides. In my neighborhood, you know, it's pretty much all done by companies. The biggest thing that I see is sprinklers running when it's raining, and so we have got to educate people better.
That is an issue. The types of pesticides people use on their lawns, in all sorts of ways. Everybody, in one way or the other, almost everybody is contributing to this issue of pollutants going into the St. Johns River. People that live in this area,
correct. Yeah. And the caller made a very important point. Studies by the University of Florida Institute of Food and Agricultural Sciences have showed that agriculture is one of the most regulated industries in the country. An average of 33% of our production costs are for meeting regulations.
Tom on the west side. Hi, Tom. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. What I was interested in is, are any of these practices that the agricultural community is using, are any of them applicable to the urban environment?
You mean urban agriculture?
No, just urban environment in general. What can homeowners and businesses do? Is it any of it, anything that they can suggest that would help?
Okay, sure. Thanks for that.
Yes. They actually have, through your county extension office, they have a yards and landscapes program that, you know, gives you information about watering because, you know, timing of fertilization and pesticide use and water application is very important. They're an integral component of that. So there is ample information out there to be able to help you manage that those lawns.
It's Amiri on the south side as we take your calls at 549-2937 this morning. Amiri. Good morning, Amiri.
Good morning. I think sort of would have, judging from what comes out of my spigot, is bad enough. It can't get any worse. I mean, I'm even thinking, we buy spring water because this, around the faucets, you know, you can see some corrosion from just the water. And I think we need to improve the purity of it rather than take any chances on making it any worse, especially since that thing in Detroit. I mean, we have to be very careful.
Oh, you mean Flint, Michigan, right?
Flint.
Okay.
We can't take any chances and we can't just...
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. And here's an email from Bill in Springfield. The Miami Herald just published an editorial explaining why the new water policy is a big win for polluters. They will basically self-police, and there's little teeth in enforcement. And when the caller talks about horror stories like Flint, Michigan, we haven't heard about an issue like that here in Florida, although people are sending me links to a study that came out a few years ago showing that Jacksonville's drinking water is rated among the most unsafe in the nation. That was from 4 or 5 years ago, though. But what about those concerns?
Well, two things, Melissa. First, the drinking water is not the water they're pumping out of the ground. It's the infrastructure. The pipes are corroded. Most cities in Florida have very antiquated delivery systems. So those pipes are breaking down. You're seeing corrosion. And so that's the problem. And the infrastructure cost to replace that is significant. I mean, you know, in the millions of dollars. In the city of Palatka, where I was a commissioner, you know, the cost for replacing pipes that have been in there for 70 or 80 years was in the $20 to $30 million range. As far as the Miami Herald, very liberal newspaper, I think that they need to go back and read the bill because specifically it says, and I'll get to it right here, that the DEP will establish the total maximum daily loads to achieve the Basin Management Action Plan's reductions for nutrients and permitting and other regulatory programs, including water quality-based effluent limitations. So, quite frankly, the bill addresses that, and there will be regulatory programs. It's not a volunteer.
Greg in Arlington. Hi, Greg. You're on the air.
It's Rick.
Okay. I was given the wrong name. Sorry, Rick. Good morning.
Good morning. The other caller talked about some of these home divisions. The real issue is that if you don't keep up your yard and you don't have it looking pristine, they will fine you. And it's because the covenants that you, when you move into one of these subdivisions, require you to put your, you know, make your yard pristine. If you don't, they can charge you thousands of dollars. So I think something needs to be done on that side. I know a friend of mine who had trouble with his yard, and they told him if he didn't get his yard redone within the 30 days, they're going to fine him $1,000 a day.
Right.
Ended up spending about $3,000.
Yeah,
then they had to keep putting down fertilizer.
Thanks for that call, Rick. And yes, we take calls about that. Whenever we do this topic, people getting into skirmishes with their homeowners associations, I do believe the law does allow homeowners to put together what is known as a river-friendly yard. But often people will get into fights with their HOAs over this.
Well, Melissa, one of the things that people don't understand, and I see it every day, is that soil pH, in order for a fertilizer to be able to activate and make the grass green and grow, the pH of the soil has to be at least 6.5 to 7. I never see anybody putting out lime or dolomite. And so one of the problems is that they need a nutrient management plan for their yards.
Here's a tweet from Joel. Do BMPs cost more than monitoring? And if so, isn't there an incentive to do monitoring, which doesn't prevent pollution?
Quite frankly, the monitoring cost on an annual basis is significantly more expensive than the best management practices. Currently, the Water Management District, DEP, Department of Environmental Protection, and Department of Agriculture cost share with farmers for this implementing these best management practices that makes it a all-in-the-game program.
Let's take one more call for Phil Leary of the North Florida Growers. It's Sim along JTB. Sim, is that your name? Good morning.
Yeah, Sims.
Here. Hey, good morning.
I don't know if this is related to your guest's topic. I missed the beginning of the show, but I've been hearing from beekeepers, local beekeepers, that they're losing hives because of pesticides. And, you know, if we lose the bee population, we lose a lot. So I'll just leave it at that. And if that falls under your purview, great, you can speak to it. Otherwise, I'm just going to hang up.
All right. Thanks for that.
Well, Melissa, the bigger problems are varroa mites. Pesticides are a very minimal program with at least commercial bees, but the mites that have come in that infest the hives are a much bigger problem and much more difficult to control.
As the session goes forward, what do you have your eye on in Tallahassee?
Well, we're continuing to look at several bills that will promote agriculture, an agritourism bill that essentially will allow farmers to do more public participation and have events on their farms to better educate the urban population. That's a very important bill. We'll also continue to watch the budget and what funding is going to be coming available for these projects, like in the lower basin of the St. Johns River that is so critically important.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Melissa.
Philip Leary represents the North Florida Growers Exchange. And much more still ahead. Later, The Spectator with some ideas for your weekend. But up next, Providing Homes for Heroes. We'll tell you about a unique program for local veterans trying to buy or refinance their home. That's in a moment.
I'm Rick Mullaney, Director of the Public Policy Institute at Jacksonville University. Join me for WJCT's quarterly program, Policy Matters. On each installment, we look at how public policy affects our lives. Join the conversation with former Florida Governor and U.S. Senator Bob Graham and Chris Hamm, former Chief of Staff for Mayor Alvin Brown. That's on the next Policy Matters, Wednesday morning at 9 on 89.9 WJCT.
This is the sound of drama. This is the sound of your community.
Good morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.
Stay connected. Stay informed. Enjoy live streaming of your favorite local WJCT and PBS and NPR content, all free from your devices. The WJCT app, available now in the Apple App Store and Google Play.
The Supreme Court weighed in on clean air rules the other day, but the justices aren't the ones making the power.
It's not like you're take your furnace and put it on steroids. You're trying to heat your house. We're trying to take care of 2 million homes.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. How power plants are warming up to new clean energy regulations. That's next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
On the next Fresh Air, is polling good or bad for democracy? We'll talk with historian and journalist Jill Lepore, who explores that question in her New Yorker article, Politics and the New Machine. And we'll talk with Nate Silver, founder of the blog 538, which reports on and analyzes polling data, aggregates polls, and predicts outcomes. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, it's a special program helping veterans and the unique needs of military families buy or refinance their homes. Brian Cletus and his partner Jessica Vaughn are both realtor affiliates here in town with the Homes for Heroes program, helping anyone in a hero field save money on their home, buying, selling, or refinancing. Brian, Jessica, good to share this with our listeners. Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's start with you, Brian. You first made me aware of this. You're a naval reservist, correct?
Yes.
So this is personal for you.
It is. It's very personal. Being in the military with our constantly moving, it's about every 3 years we're picking up, having to move all the way across the country. Started in Mayport. I've moved to upstate New York and then back to Jacksonville. So I haven't moved as much as normal Navy families move. But, I mean, I've bought and sold at least 5 houses now. So
right. And it can be so tough on a military family trying to get into a nice piece of real estate. Jessica, this is a national organization, but you and Brian are both local realtor affiliates helping people here in town. How does Homes for Heroes work?
Well, we actually, it's more than just the veterans as well. It's firefighters, EMTs, police officers, teachers, nurses. And what we do as an affiliate is we have actually signed a pledge to donate 25% of our gross commissions back to the families themselves. So when they buy or sell a house, 25% of my commission actually goes directly to that family, as well as money from our affiliate lenders and other companies we work with as well.
Wow. And again, this isn't just veterans. It's clergy, healthcare, teachers, medical professionals, firefighters, EMT, law enforcement. Ooh. Nonprofit employees.
Yes.
You know, WJCT is a nonprofit organization. So do we count? Can it be any nonprofit?
Yes, ma'am.
Nonprofit.
Wow. Okay. I'm going to have to share this with all of my fellow coworkers. So on average, you're able to give back between $2,500 to $3,000 to a homeowner purchasing, let's say, a $250,000 home. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And so that's a pretty nice chunk of savings.
It is. Yeah. It really helps with, when it helps with closing costs, some people need a lot of money up front to purchase a house, and this just gives them a little bit of help.
And this program has been around, Jessica, for several years now.
Yes, ma'am. Actually, it was started right after 9/11. And it started in Minnesota, and it was just a way for some realtors decided that they wanted to give back for the law enforcement and the firefighters, the EMTs that were going out there and helping these families of the tragedies that were underpaid, that couldn't afford to buy a home after all they'd given back. So some realtors in Minnesota decided to start the program as a way to give back, and since then it's gone national.
It's spread all over the country.
Yes, ma'am.
Mainly through word of mouth, it seems like.
It's through word of mouth and the affiliate realtors and our partners as well.
So how can people find out if they qualify? How can they learn more? Can they just ask any realtor? They need to find a realtor affiliate like you guys first.
That is correct. You go on www.homesforheroes.com. That's the national website. If you are in the military, a veteran, police, anything affiliated with it, you automatically qualify.
Uh-huh.
There's no catch, no red tape, anything.
You don't need
that.
A certain credit score or anything like that?
No, you don't need a certain credit score. I mean, to get financed for a home, you definitely have to have a credit score that can get you money lended to you. However, working with an agent, you're
right.
Good.
And so once they go to the website, they find someone like you to work with, then what happens? What's the process like?
Well, then usually we're going to ask them to get pre-qualified. And as long as they're qualified and they're in one of those fields, that's all that they need to have is to be in one of those fields and they qualify.
And how many of these transactions would you say you do every year?
Well, we are brand new to the program.
You're new to it. Okay.
Yes, ma'am. But they have done over $13 million back to the families to date.
Wow. And you're a Navy wife, right?
Yes, ma'am.
So that has a personal interest for you.
It does, yes.
Wow. And as we talk about the Homes for Heroes program with Brian Cletus and Jessica Vaughn, two local realtor affiliates, we're going to take a couple of your calls. Let's go now to Diane at the Beaches. Hi, Diane. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question. I grew up at Fort Benning, Georgia. I was an Army brat, and the first home that I bought was a veteran's loan. This was back in the mid-70s, And I was just wondering if that program had been discontinued. I guess it was. That was back when you could assume a loan.
No, the VA, we work with the VA home loans, so they can get the no money down programs on top of this to help cover any other costs that are associated on top of that.
Right. And well, and so my question was, on top of that, you know, in the banking industry, all loans used to be assumable. Could legislators not actually make that available for VA loans, so that then a resale of those homes would be even more lucrative to buyers in the future? And thanks for my call. I'll hang up now.
Okay. Did you catch the last part of what she said?
Yeah, that may be something on the legislative end that I would have to do a little bit more research into. I'm not aware how that would work with the assumable loans. But if they want to send us an email at servingjacksheroes@gmail.com, I'd be happy to do some more research on it and get back to them.
servingjacksheroes@gmail.com. If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Brian Cletus and Jessica Vaughn, both realtor affiliates with the National Homes for Heroes program, a national effort helping anyone in a hero field save money on their home, whether you're buying, selling, or refinancing. This includes veterans, military professionals, teachers, medical professionals, firefighters, EMTs, anyone in law enforcement. It also includes clergy, healthcare, and nonprofit employees. It's a lot of folks. Anything else, Brian, that people need to know about Homes for Heroes?
Well, I mean, we have a very there's a strict membership requirement for the agents to be with Homes for Heroes. You get the best of the best from the agents. After the completion of the purchase or sale, you get a survey, and if we don't get top marks in that survey, then we get I guess we get fired.
Well, you guys are, I don't think you're going to get fired. I think you guys are doing a great job. And again, the website is homesforheroes.com, but here in town, email Brian and Jessica at this email address. It was
servingjacksheroes@gmail.com.
servingjacksheroes@gmail.com. Email them to find out how you can qualify to save some money, quite a bit of money, actually, if you're looking to buy, sell, or refinance your property. Brian Cletus, Jessica Vaughn, both with the Homes for Heroes program this morning. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Back in a moment with The Spectator and another interesting idea for your weekend. Keep listening.
With recent workplace and school shootings, businesses are responding to rising concerns.
75% to 80% are looking to now do some type of armed intruder / active shooter training.
Fleeing, hiding, and fighting back. How companies hope to counter terrorists, angry employees, and other dangers. Later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Game wardens in Maine have jurisdiction just like state troopers, statewide, any crime, anytime. But when it comes to violent crime, they really only deal with violence against, like, trout.
Join us next time for more True Stories Told Live. This week, Zimbabwe, camping, goths, and grace. That's the Moth Radio Hour from PRX.
Saturdays at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Follow what's happening at WJCT, even when you're away from your radio. You can follow WJCT on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can listen live online to WJCT-FM at wjct.org/listen, or on iTunes Radio or TuneIn Radio. And you can hear all of your favorite WJCT-FM shows anytime on demand on iTunes and Stitcher. Wherever you are, WJCT is there.
When there is a treatment for a disease but no drug available.
You have
kids who need a life-saving drug in front of you and you don't have enough drug to go around. How do you make that decision?
The quiet life and death battle to hoard and distribute scarce medications, a crisis going on behind healthcare's curtain. Next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International. Weekdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, there is still time to reserve your spot for the great First Coast Connect treasure hunt on Jekyll Island. Join travel expert Judy Wells and me at the new Seaside Westin Hotel on the island along the beautiful Georgia coast. This is set for February 19th and 20th as we host a Friday night wine tasting, a three-course dinner, and then Saturday it's a beachcombing scavenger hunt for those famous Jekyll Island glass globes. They've become a beloved island tradition. Judy and I will host all meals and wine tastings and breakfast, too, and lead the treasure hunt. You need to join us. It's going to be so much fun. Get all the details at Judy's website, wellsworld.net. Again, that's the great First Coast Connect treasure hunt, not this weekend, but next weekend up on Jekyll Island. Well, unique and sustainable art and jewelry from around the world will be on display tomorrow night at a special gallery event in Riverside. This is happening at the Oasis, an historic building and a hidden gem on Stockton Street. Jacob Danner, owner of Anazeo Galleries, is here now to tell us about it. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for having me.
So not only is the building itself gorgeous, the Oasis, but the jewelry you'll be debuting, made from recycled materials and some of the top jewelry designers in the country, the wares on display are going to be pretty eye-popping too.
They're very unique, especially to the First Coast area. And we are the only ones that have these lines and excited about rolling them out.
Now you have Kimberlyn Brown's line. She's created jewelry for Adele, Zac Posen, and other big famous celebrities.
Yes.
Whoopi Goldberg. Tell me a little bit about her.
I met her last August at the New York Now show, and she creates beautiful, fine jewelry made of 18-karat gold, but she follows a natural aesthetic of the oceans using coral and sea anemone formations, Casamiga pearls, Tahitian pearls. But she studied in Tuscany when she lived there with the goldsmith masters.
Very nice. You'll also have a sustainable line from jeweler Emil Shapiro, everything created from recycled metals.
Emily Shapiro.
Emily,
yes.
Sorry.
Yes. I met at the same time in August and saw her, both of them, when I was in New York a few weeks ago. And she just uses the ancient process of lost wax casting. And everything is handmade. All of these are handmade products made in America here and made one at a time with lots of love and care and pouring their spirit in it. And
right. So. Yeah. Now, these are all handmade, really unique products. And not only is the shopping experience going to be excellent, the space, this new gallery is having its grand opening tomorrow night at the Oasis. This is an historically significant building in Riverside.
Yes, Henry Flagler gave that as a wedding gift to his daughter. And the house is pristine. It's three floors. And my gallery will have original oil paintings on the walls, at least the first and second floors for now. We're going to be looking at local artists that are interested perhaps in displaying their art there.
Will you be there permanently once you open?
Yes, yeah. We will be there Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. daily.
This is at 1662 Stockton Street.
Yes.
The Oasis.
Painting, sculpture, art glass by Robert Held, a great master up in British Columbia. Handmade scarf lines by Krista Louise, out of New York also. And just all sorts of unique treasures.
This event is tomorrow night, going to be quite a party, it sounds like.
Yes. Everyone is invited. We'll have a DJ there, a champagne toast to kick off the Valentine's weekend.
Yeah, and hey, good shopping for your sweetheart just in time for Valentine's Day.
Yes, price point that everybody can get something.
Oh, very nice. That's good to hear, right? So we've got some lower price and higher price.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, very exciting. I know a lot of work has gone into this, so this will be the payoff.
Yes, I launched the gallery in the January of 2000 on the cusp of the new millennium, and I have just been waiting for the right time to launch a stick and brick location here after coming back to Jacksonville 2 years ago from Washington, D.C. And I think it bodes well for what we're bringing to Jacksonville.
Again, it is Anazao's grand opening event tomorrow night at the Oasis, an historic building in Riverside, that address, 1662 Stockton Street. One-of-a-kind pieces and a big party tomorrow night, 6 o'clock?
5:30.
Jacob Danner, owner of Anazao Galleries. Kudos. Have a great time, and thanks for being here.
Thank you, Melissa.
Again, that's tomorrow night. We'll have some more ideas for your weekend from The Spectator in just a few minutes.
WJCT and the Florida Theater are proud to bring me, Michael Feldman, and my show, What Do You Know, to the Florida Theater in Jacksonville on February 20th. We'll do the quiz, have some fun, enjoy the southern winter just a little bit. You bring the sunshine, I'll bring the sunscreen. Tickets available now at the Florida Theater box office by phone at 904-355-2787 or online at floridatheater.com.
Sponsored in part by Folio Media House.
I'm Marco Werman from The World in Iran's capital, Tehran. On a day that changed this country, February 11th marks the 37th anniversary of the 1979 Islamic Revolution. Iran's young people, who make up the vast majority these days, were not even born when the revolution happened. How Iranians mark this historic day next time on The World from Tehran. This afternoon at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
You see them, holding hands at the grocery store, wearing matching sweaters, referring to themselves as we. And Snap wondered, is it a phase? Or do they know something that we don't? On the next Snap Judgment, perfect match. Snap Judgment, storytelling with the beat. Do not miss it.
Sundays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. It is chilly out, but we're going to heat things up finally this hour. Lots of choices for your Valentine's Day weekend. Here she is every Thursday to take us all around town. We welcome the mistress of mayhem, the maven of mirth, the new podcasting star, Carrie Spectman, here today.
I'm not the star.
Oh, well, you interview the stars.
I am the host. I'm the co-host.
Yes.
You, my friend, are the star.
No. You have since I helped you kick this thing off, you've had on Lou Turner,
yes.
First Coast News.
Yes.
Courtney Lewis from The Symphony.
Yeah.
Nikki Preed from Channel 4. And who else?
Matt Pittman will be coming up.
Okay.
And Senator Aaron Bean.
Oh, that was my idea. You followed up on my suggestion.
I listened to you, girl.
All right.
It's a phone in, though, because they're in session.
Oh, that's true.
So.
Okay, so people can download Carrie's podcast Another Round.
If you go on my Facebook page, you can just click on the link. It's already up.
That's right. Okay, so that is happening. Also, lots of ideas for Valentine's Day weekend. What's going on?
I don't think I have one Valentine's Day.
You don't actually have anything romantic on this list.
Do you think I'm a romantic?
No.
Yeah, you're right.
Not really.
One event I wanted to first mention tonight is the Cards for Canines charity poker tournament.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very sad fact that 22 veterans commit suicide every day. That's awful.
Yes.
And the Jacksonville Bar Association Young Lawyers section is hosting this event to create awareness and raise funds. And the group trains dogs to become service dogs and then pairs them with veterans who have post-traumatic stress.
Sure.
Traumatic brain injury. And so anyway, it's a poker tournament. It's at Best Bet, the one at Regency.
The one by the Regency Mall.
And it's I don't have any tables, but it's going to be lots of fun. And then they're going to, actually, Lou Turner will be there.
Yeah.
I will be there. We have bounties on our heads. So if you kick us out, you get,
nice.
I think you get extra
money. A lot of money
and
raised.
It won't be
then.
Hard to kick me out because I'm terrible.
I went to an event at Best Bet that the Young Lawyers hosted, raising money for the Heal Foundation, and it was very successful. These do really well. So it's Cards for Canines charity poker tournament tonight at Best Bet.
Yes. And they even have, I think 5:30, you can get a lesson. I think it actually starts at 6:30.
That's good. So come on out for that. That's in the Regency area. Now, here is a romantic one for you. Can't Help Falling in Love, a tribute to Elvis.
That is romantic.
Tonight through Sunday at the Alhambra Theater.
Yes. You scooched down. You got me all confused.
I'm going, down your list in order.
Sorry. It is to kick off Alhambra's 2016 music series. Kevin Mills, one of the top Elvis. This is impersonators, but they actually prefer to be called tribute artists.
Are you serious?
I've interviewed several, yes.
Is that really the thing?
Well, because impersonating...
You can't say impersonating.
Well, you can say it, but impersonating is like you are trying to be him.
Okay.
A tribute artist, you're kind of
giving tribute to the king.
You're kind of putting your own spin on it.
Okay.
Yes, and it will be Valentine's weekend, and you'll fall in love with Elvis all over again.
Absolutely.
And maybe the person you're with also.
Absolutely. So that's tonight through Sunday
at the Alhambra.
Also tonight through February 21st. Oh, yes, the Phantom of the Opera.
Yes. Also romantic, I guess.
Very, that's romantic, sure.
Yes, I've never seen it.
Never seen Phantom?
No.
Oh, wow, it's a classic. You should go.
Apparently. I know, I might.
Yes, that is coming up. That's actually debuting tonight at the Times Union
Center.
Is
it? I think it did it. I put the 11th because it is today.
That is today.
Has it
already started?
I think it started yesterday.
Okay.
Don't quote me. Doesn't matter because it already happened.
All right. More theater to talk about. Players by the Sea is performing Mothers and Sons.
Yes. It deals with a woman who cannot accept the death of her son from AIDS 20 years earlier. So she visits his lover and it's very deep and...
Yeah, they do a lot of cutting-edge work at Players.
They do. I think they do a lot of pieces that have not been seen anywhere else. This one, I think, has. But, yeah, they do a lot of – they don't do a lot of chestnuts, as they say in the business.
No. They're not into that.
No.
Now, everybody needs to be aware the Donna Marathon is Saturday, especially if you're –
Saturday is the 5K.
Oh, excuse me. Saturday's the 5K.
That's the one. It's the Prime Osborne. They have a family run.
That's right.
And then Sunday is the whole
big
shebang.
The big event.
Yes.
So if you are out at the beaches, particularly on Sunday, be advised. Lots of traffic.
Yes. And there are a million things going on, so I thought it's just better if people go to breastcancermarathon.com. There's information about parking. And they're also really big on having spectators out on the streets cheering people on, and it's
okay.
A very cool event.
Okay, breastcancermarathon.com for the Donna Marathon. And this is excellent. On Saturday, it's Let's Dance, a tribute to David Bowie in Hemming Park on Saturday.
Yes, it starts at noon, and they are going to have 20 bands on two stages over 5 hours, and they will have food trucks and, oh, sorry, that was my computer.
That's okay.
They encourage you to bring chairs, but there will be limited seating. They're going to be, I don't know, Master Radical will be playing, Heard of Watts, Jackson Vegas. I know Grant was in here last week. Groove Coalition, you can go on their Facebook page and find out all of the bands and what times they'll be playing. And
I just saw actually on Twitter last night that David Bowie's the late David Bowie's going to be a grandfather. The circle of life continues. So, yeah, it's very bittersweet. Yeah. But that's Saturday, noon to 5 in Hemming Park.
Free.
Free event. Also Saturday, what's the second annual Rockabilly Prom?
Well, it is an event that was started by Cindy Platt. And she started an organization called Rockstart, which is rallying oral cancer support through art. She has had to deal with oral cancer, which is a cancer you really don't hear much about at all.
Uh-huh.
And she's young. And so she created this event, and she owns Grease Rags, so she's into all that 50s and cool hip stuff. And so it's a prom. It's a 50s-style prom, and the benefits all go to Rockstart.
And that is 7 o'clock Saturday at the Ramona Pavilion Ballroom.
Bet you didn't even know there was one.
Where is that?
I would imagine it's on Ramona Boulevard.
Okay. I've never been there. I'm going to have to check that out.
I think there used to be a church over there, so maybe that's what it is.
Okay. Also Saturday, there's a 5 and 10K up at Hannah Park.
Yes, if you don't care to run 13 or 26.2 miles. you can head on over there.
Patty Griffin at the Florida Theater, Saturday night, the Grammy Award-winning Patty Griffin, gospel singer.
Yes.
Come into town.
And she will be performing in the round. I'm not sure how they're going to do that at the Florida Theater, but anyway, she also will be performing with Sarah Watkins and Anais. Is that how you say it?
I think so, yeah.
Anais Mitchell.
Okay.
It is a celebration of American songwriting and performance.
Okay. Also, Duval Hip Hop Festival coming up Saturday.
Yes.
Power 106.1 is presenting this at the 1901 Music Hall Saturday night.
Yes. It is hosted by Mr. Lowe and perhaps my favorite name I've heard in a long time, co-hosted by Stinkerelli.
I got to get him in here, just right off the bat.
Maybe it's a she.
Or maybe it is a she, yeah.
You never know.
Okay. Also, today through Sunday, it's the Battle of Olestee. They do this every
year.
And
I know this is not in our... And I usually just do the Duval,
yes.
St. John's. But I have been to this a million years ago, and it's really kind of fascinating.
It's a Civil War reenactment.
And they are, like, in the duds and sleeping in the tents.
Yeah, they really act it all out.
Yeah, it is not, like, a joke. It is for real. So it's really interesting. And they have, like, artillery, and it's, yeah, mounted cavalries.
You can come and watch this. This is in Olestee at the Historic State Park. And then last but not least, the Curling Nationals, the 2016
Yay,
Curling Nationals.
Here. So excited.
Here in town at the arena.
Yes, it's going on. You can go to 2016curlingnationals.com because it has all the schedules because they play pretty much like 8 in the morning till 9.
Yeah, you
and
can go watch it.
Yes, and I will be on on the John Phillips Community Just Ice. Get it? Team.
I get it.
And we will be competing in the community.
Oh, really? You're going to curl?
Oh, I'm going to curl like you've never seen.
All right.
I'm going to fall.
I know. That's why I haven't done it, because I don't want to fall.
There are waivers involved.
Yes, definitely sign multiple waivers.
Yes,
all will be fine.
Sunday are the finals. And actually, if you go, they have a lane set up where you can go and like people can just go out there and
okay.
See what it's like.
So, yeah, get out and see the 2016 USA Curling Nationals downtown at the Veterans Arena. You can see the Spectator.
Yeah.
She'll be doing it.
Hopefully, she will not be falling on her face.
And check out Carrie's Facebook page and website for the latest podcast debuting another round. Very proud.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for being our first guest.
I am honored to do
You're
so.
You're part of history.
That's right. And that's our program. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. You can watch the show video on demand now up every day at tvjax.com. Next on Diane Rehm, Russia continues airstrikes in Syria. A panel joins Diane to discuss the latest on the military, political, and humanitarian crises there. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow for our Friday Media Roundtable. See you then.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.